Thank you, Bob. Really enjoyed that. I almost came out and grabbed Charlotte and started dancing a little cha-cha. That was delightful. And we appreciate everyone being here. We're honored to be a part of this Sunday celebration this morning. It's really great to be with you. We're both honored to be here. I said to Charlotte last night, I wondered if we could get here a little early and attend the kirtan chanting back and forth. And sure enough, we got here early, and I am so blown away from that experience. That was wonderful. Now, I didn't hear any, I didn't understand everything that was said. It was something about scrambled eggs and pizza, something. But every now and then they'd say, Jay! And I thought, oh, they're asking me to do something. No, it's not. Jay! Okay. But it, you know, interestingly enough, I have a dream, or I had a dream, that I could be part of a unity community where they had the call and response, the chanting, and have a real love for the Eastern philosophy and the Eastern religions and the whole nine yards. And I'll tell you more about it as we go into service today. And the title of my service is The Mystical Experience. And, you know, what does that mean to you? Have any of you had what you might call a mystical experience? All right, wonderful. We might, if we have time, we might have one or two of you share a little bit toward the end of the service. What is mysticism? What does it mean to have a mystical experience? The reason I brought this topic up, it was the last talk actually I gave before I graduated from ministerial school. Wasn't that all a lot long ago, 10 years or so? But I got interested in it in ministerial school because if you start looking, and I'm sure many of you are fondly aware of this, that most all of the major religions and movements in our world have been founded, created by someone who has had a mystical experience. That seems to be the fuel. If you think about Paul, you know, on the way to Damascus, and he got knocked off his horse. He had such a mystical experience. And Jesus up on Mount Haran and his mystical experience. And you think about Muhammad in the cave meditating and his mystical experience to form the Islam religion. And then you think about Siddhartha meditating under the Bodhi tree for 80 days. He had a mystical experience and became the Buddha. And it goes on and on. We're going to talk about more of these today. Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. We're both mystics, and Charles in particular was known as the American mystic, and he coined the phrase practical mysticism, which I'm going to be talking about today. So when you think about it, what is a mystical experience? Well, in relationship to God, it's a direct encounter with God is what it is. It's a direct knowingness of supreme power. And we're going to be talking today about four characteristics of the mystical experience, which are in William James' book, Varieties of Religious Experiences. Four common denominators. But first, I want to tell you a little story about a student I had at one time, because mysticism is very much related to oneness. Now, Reverend Linda mentioned oneness last week. Fortunately, in the English language, words can have a varied number of meanings. Her meaning, I believe, was that it's relationship between our divine nature and our physical nature. The oneness I'm going to be talking about today is the relationship between us and the divine. When we are fully one with divine, and that it becomes a mystical experience. So I had a student, and this was years ago, and she was really, really doing well. Very, very intelligent young lady and in unity, and she was doing great with all the principles of unity and what have you. But when it came to oneness, she said, frankly, Reverend John, I just don't get oneness. And I thought about that a lot, and at that time, I was at a loss as to what to say, and now I would have an answer, because she was very, very bright. And to understand oneness, you have to go beyond the intellect. You have to get to that point of understanding from a heart center nature, from our heart. It's an awareness from our heart. The mind cannot comprehend oneness. It just can't. And the mind really can't comprehend a mystical experience. It really can't. When a mystical experience happens to you, it's so powerful, but there's no explanation. You can't tell somebody about it, expect them to understand. You can tell people about it, but they may not understand it. So this young lady, we'll call her Pat, didn't understand oneness. And eventually, I think she got it, that it's beyond our mind's ability to understand it, and it is a direct relationship with the divine. I want to read to you the best explanation that I have ever found regarding oneness. And here's a quote from Meister Eckhart. Now, Meister is not his first name. Meister Eckhart got the name Meister because he graduated with a master's degree. He was a Catholic priest and lived in the 13th century. And if you start talking about mystics, he's going to be the number one person you're going to mention is Meister Eckhart. And here's this quote, and I want you to kind of allow this to sink in. I may even read it twice. "The eye through which I see God is the same eye through which God sees me. My eye and God's eye are one eye. One seeing, one knowing, and one love. The eye through which I see God is the same eye through which God sees me. My eye and God's eye are one. One seeing, one knowing, one love." So this idea of oneness is very much related to the mystical experience. Because when you're in a mystical experience, you're in oneness. You're enveloped in the divine. You know, sometimes we don't understand our heart center, our heart nature. So what is it that is unique about the heart center? And I think that most of us in unity, correct me if I'm wrong, are attempting or striving to live from our heart center. Are we not? Yes. Isn't that what we're trying to do?
Yes.
Most of us are pretty smart. We have an intellect and we know things and we can understand. Charlotte is my example. If I need to know something, I can just ask Charlotte. She can give me an answer. I mean, she knows things. And she can also live, though, through her heart center. So our heart center is this power. And it's your intuition for certain, but it's more than that because it includes our conscious and our subconscious minds. So the heart center is our connection with spirit. So during a mystical experience, you're connected with the divine through your heart center. And your heart center opens up widely. Now I'll tell you real quick my experience. I was going to wait a little bit, but I want to share it now. When I was a young man, I think 5 or 6 years old, just a wee lad, we lived in Bradenton, Florida. I think that's where Reverend Linda lives now. So I was in my bedroom was off a hallway, and it was an inside bedroom, and at night, I was having these terrible nightmares. And what they were about are these giants that would come down the hallway, and they'd come down the hallway, and then they'd stop and look into my room. The little boy, I was terrified. Sometimes I'd wake up. So one night I woke up from this dream and went across the hallway to the bathroom and looked out the window in the bathroom. And facing me was this radiant face, Indian woman, and she her third eye was exposed. That third eye was beaming into my heart, just beaming into my heart. And I didn't know what that meant at that time. And I went back to bed, though, and I was able to go to sleep. I was able to go to sleep. And I'm not saying that all my nightmares went away. They didn't. But I never had that terror anymore. I never had that supreme terror anymore that I had at first. And what that dream has meant to me over the years is that those giants represented all the major, major problems that were going to come my way in my lifetime. And they have. Okay? And they have. But through the heart center, through that loving kindness, that connection with heart, we can overcome anything in our lives. We can overcome absolutely anything. Now, we get in disputes sometimes with our intellect. I do. I imagine you do. And the intellect wants to kind of control things, right? The intellect says, oh, you're foolish. You're doing something silly. But I think the more we learn to live from our heart center, that field of awareness, it's a field, really, of awareness. When we can live from that, we'll be directed to only the best in our lives, only the highest for our good. So let's talk a little bit about those four commonalities of the mystical experience that William James pointed out for us. The first one is ineffability. Not laughability, but ineffability, which simply means you can't explain it in words. No words can describe it. If you've had a mystical experience, and I know a bunch of you have, and part of this talk is about opening us more to the mystical experience and seeing it almost like last night at 2:30 in the morning, I awoke to a tremendous thunderstorm in our neighborhood. I don't know about you. And it was kind of a mystical experience. And what I'm saying to you is the point of this lesson is we can be open to a mystical experience and use it in our lives to benefit our lives. It doesn't have to be some major profound experience that you start a new revolution or you start a new movement. That may happen, but it can be something small in your life. It gives you courage. Part of the issue in having a mystical experience is overcoming those self limitations that we've been told we had. Self limitations. Some of us have felt, Myrtle Fillmore, for example, she felt that she was limited by her bodily illness. She knew she had tuberculosis. She knew that her family had told her body was weak, that she was going to be a sickly all her life. But she had a mystical experience when she heard those words. You are a child of God. You don't inherit sickness. I can almost see her, you know, hearing that and then having that experience that propelled her into starting a prayer, silent prayer movement, silent unity. So ineffability, you can't really explain it. What's the second one? The second one, it has a certain noetic quality. You see, a spiritual experience or a mystical experience has a noetic quality. There's this knowledge that becomes imparted in you from that experience, as I described for mine. Now, Eckhart Tolle, as a young man, was, and I know you all are familiar with Eckhart Tolle, written Power of Now and A New Earth, Stillness Speaks. We actually were fortunate to see him on our honeymoon in Hawaii, an incredible man. So, as a young man, he was in Cambridge University in England, and he got disenchanted. He was very bright, obviously. And he's doing quite well, but he got disenchanted. What is this? It's not doing anything for me. It's not giving me what I'm looking for in my life. So he dropped out, and he became depressed. He was very depressed. And so he was in his apartment one night, and he had even got so depressed that he thought about ending it all. And suddenly he had this thought, is, who is it that's observing these suicidal thoughts that I'm having? Who is it that's observing those thoughts? Well, there's this thought that I'm having, but some power, some strength beyond my own is observing these thoughts. And I'm separate from them. That is not who I am. I am not these thoughts down here. Myrtle Fillmore realized, I am not that ill person. He realized, I'm not this depressed person. There's this higher source, this divine, he ends up now calling God beingness. There's this beingness that's observing me. And he went to sleep. He went right to sleep. Lived in an apartment, he got up in the morning, went to the window, and he looked out, and everything looked fresh and clean, like it had rained, you know, like it's raining here. And it was so clean and fresh, and there's this sparkle. His experience was so powerful, he ended up sitting on a park bench for about 2 years, just observing. Kind of like Forrest Gump, you know, when Forrest was telling his story. He was sitting on that park bench just observing life. And, wow, the life is wonderful. Life is mysterious. Life is beautiful. How great it is to be alive. And today now he's, I guess, some people say the most spiritual person alive. But so it's that noetic quality. He had that knowing that he, in fact, was not those depressing thoughts. The other unfortunate, number three, is the spiritual experience or the mystical experience is transient. This is the part I don't like. It doesn't last forever. You can't go into like a mystical experience and stay there for the rest of your life. Now, if you come to Channing, you know, every Sunday morning, you're going to have it for at least 45 minutes, right? But generally speaking, it doesn't last. His was very rare that it lasted that long. And I think, you know, Saul on the way to Damascus, Paul changed his name. I think he was blind for like 2 or 3 days and, you know, sat around in the town trying to figure out what was going on. He finally came to his senses. But typically, they last for, you know, maybe, what, few minutes at most, maybe a few seconds. That's all you need, is that encounter with the divine. And my theory is that if we as individuals, truth students, can be more aware of that, we can have more of those. We can see more of those in the sunsets and in the sunrises. We can see more of that in our grandchildren and in, you know, someone who's making their transition when you hold their hand. You can have that mystical experience, knowing that they're moving on to another experience. That's the basis for this lesson. And the last, of course, the last one is passivity. Now, what he means by that is that when we're in a mystical experience, we have no control. It doesn't mean we start, you know, like we would maybe in chanting or something, but it doesn't mean you start shaking or anything, but you could, I suppose. But what it means is you're not in control. Now, I know we don't have any control freaks at Unity of Wimberley. I know that for a fact. I've been told. But truth is, when you're in a mystical experience, it's very powerful. And you're just sort of going along with it. And think of all the wonderful things that have come out of it, such as Course in Miracles. How about conversations with God? How about Michelangelo when he was painting the Sistine Chapel? Do you think he wasn't maybe in a mystical experience to be able to do something like that? I choose to think he is or was. The beauty that comes out of art and science and music when someone's in that mystical space. It's wonderful. It contrasts with what you read in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. It's a contrast to what you hear on the evening news. Every now and then they'll throw something in there at the end that something good happened. But generally speaking, it's a contrast. So it's that passivity. You are actually, during a mystical experience, suspended in the arms of a universal power. So I honestly think, too, that through our meditation and prayer, we can prepare ourselves for that mystical experience. And we can, certainly if you've had one and you recall it, like I do with mine, I'm kind of back there. I'm not having another mystical experience, but I'm kind of back there, if you will. I'm enjoying the fruits of that mystical experience. So whatever the mystical experience is that you've had, you can enjoy it for the rest of your life, one day at a time. You can enjoy that experience. So I want to close with a poem. There is probably time if one or two of you would like to come up and there is time. That if one or two of you would like to come up and share briefly your mystical experience, I would dearly love to hear it. So I'll give you a minute to think about, you know, a spirit calling you to come up. I know we have I guess you could use this mic right here.
Got one right there.
But I want to read this poem first. This is by Walt Whitman, one of my favorites. I believe in you, my soul. Loaf with me on the grass. Loose the stop from your throat. Only the lull I like, the hum of your valved voice. I mind how much we laid. Such a transparent summer morning. Swiftly arose and spread around me the peace and knowledge that pass all the arguments of the earth. And I know that the hand of God is the promise of my own. And all and ever born are also my brothers and the women, my sisters and lovers. And that a Kelson is the creation of love. Well, now a Kelson is that big piece on a boat that holds it together, that big piece of wood that holds a wood boat together. So a Kelson is the creation of my love. And I want to, if you'll bear with me, I would like to give my interpretation of that poem. And I know you've had yours, and I could send it to you if you're interested, or we could look it up together, whatever. But I want to, if I could, share my interpretation. I trust my inner light and live freely in it. I trust my inner light and I live freely in it. Spirit, be free to create what you will with me. Spirit, be free to create whatever you will with me. My only desire is to be with you fully. My only desire is to be with you fully. We are all one. We are all one. We are all created in love. We're all created in love. And we're all one, and we're all, each of us is a mystic. If you're a Unity Truth student, you're a mystic. And before meditation then, is there anyone that feels called to come up or stand where you are? She has the mic, and I would love to hear your spiritual, your experience.
Well, my name is Shane. I'm new here.
Hi, Shane.
Couldn't help but share this experience. I'll give you a little context. In May of 2019, I found myself in a hospital. I was there for 65 days. I had a 20-hour surgery in which I actually died in the OR. They did CPR on me for 4 minutes. This wasn't the mystical experience. Unfortunately, I didn't even have the near-death experience. That was the dark night of the soul. Fast forward a year and a half later, I found myself in Costa Rica in a Moloka at a healing center with 100 other people doing breath work. Now, I dabbled in some breath work before, but there's 100 of us that are breathing deep and rhythmically. And I was experiencing a lot of weird sensations in my body as I'm going, but about the 30 to 45 minute mark, you lose track of time. Two visions appeared to me just with my eyes closed. First was a pair of blue eyes. I knew immediately they were wolf eyes, like a divine watcher was watching over me. And then all of a sudden, in the darkness, multiple blue eyes just appeared. And so I knew something was happening. I'm beginning to experience some wild sensations in my body. And then at about 10 minutes after that, a lion appeared. And I say a lion, think Aslan, think lion from the tribe of Judah. I don't know what this lion was, but I knew, you talk about losing control. I knew if I continued in this breath, I was going to lose control. Something big was about to happen. And so I began to experience the same pain that incapacitated me and put me in the hospital for 65 days in a foreign country in my abdomen. And I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? And I just continued in the breath work, and I began to cry. This is when I really began to realize that I'd stored a lot of pain and energy in my abdomen, in my sacrum. And as I continued to breathe, the facilitator came along, and they could sense that I was in this deep, intense struggle. And through that deep, rhythmic breath, the pain manifested right where it was, my pancreas was. And so through the breath, I was able to move that energy from there to my chest, to my throat. And then in this group together, 100, it's like it was this perfect time where we let out this scream, and I could literally feel that pain leave my body in that moment. And after that, I mean, I'm sweating, and it was a very intense experience, but that's
Thank
my
you.
Mystical experience.
Thank you. Anyone else? One more, maybe two more, one more at least.
I'm not going to stand. My mystical experience happened when I was 21 years old. And all my life, really, I have always felt a oneness, since even as a child, 4 or 5 years old. But anyway, this was like the big one that has sustained me all my life. So I'm living with several people on a piece of land, trust fund babies, and young women. And I had known a woman, and I didn't know at the time, but she was gay and extremely beautiful, very rich. And we were friends. And she committed suicide. She, up on the hill, she just got in her car and put some rags in the exhaust pipe and passed away. And it hit me pretty hard. And she left a note saying, you know, none of us knew she was a lesbian at that time, but that she was, and it was too hard for her to bear. So anyway, about a week later, I was sitting on my campsite and thinking about why can't people just love and be loved?
Yeah.
And I was hoping that I had never said anything to her that would have made her feel rejected.
Yeah.
Because I was unconscious of some of the things, you know, at 21 years old, you say things. Anyway, my heart just felt really full. And soon I started feeling a presence next to me to my left. And I felt like it was Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel his heart too. Feeling the same thing, you know, God's love. Just saying, why can't you love? I'm here for you. I'm here with you. And I could feel it in my heart. And my heart exploded. And I was sobbing. And I felt light all around me. And I looked up into the light. And I couldn't see my body. I couldn't see the trees. I couldn't see the ground.
Wow.
And I don't even remember when it stopped or what happened. But I woke up in my sleeping bag. And it was like, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really feel like I'm a lucky person. All my life I've had a lot of struggles. I'm perfectly healthy. It's so funny, but my foundation, I have a rheumatoid arthritis, and it's an autoimmune disease. And because of these experiences that I've had from my early childhood, you can't talk to people about it, so I would suppress it. It's like self-hatred, right? Autoimmune disease, that's what I think. You're stopping yourself from being yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally realized, man, I can't do this anymore. God, just show me. And he did.
Wow.
Or the presence of God showed me.
It's really nice. Thank
you. It is. It's beautiful. And,
thank you.
I'm 76. I don't know how many more years I have. But I feel like I need to tell people that they can do this too, that it's within our reach, all of us.
Yes,
that we can
you.
Be that humble and that vulnerable and that strong.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you very much.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one other, that my mentor in Colorado, June, has, and it's very short, she was a young lady, and she actually was Miss Alaska at one. She lived in Alaska, and she was a Unity minister. She had an experience in surgery where the words came to her, the two shall become one. The two shall become one. And this is what we're talking about with the oneness. The two. You and God become one. You can't figure that out in your mind. Your mind is useless. But when you can experience that division melts away and you realize, hey, we're one. God and I are one. What a beautiful, beautiful experience. And thank you both for sharing. Why don't we go into meditation right now? And as we do, just get comfortable in your chair. Take some deep breaths. Maybe have both feet solidly on the floor. And I like to try to keep my spine straight if possible. And take some deep cleansing breaths in through the nose. And then releasing. Just beginning that cycle of life. Breathing in and releasing. And we might start by just affirming together that we are children of God. Can we say that? We are children of God. That childlike God resides in all of us. And what a beautiful morning to let that child play. What a beautiful morning to experience the oneness, to experience the love, to experience forgiveness. To experience peace. Just breathe into that understanding that we are one, that we are children of God. And we play on this playground of earth, and we fall and we scrape and we get boo-boos on our knees and our shins and our elbows. But the love of God is there to pick us up and dust us off and put us back together again. So that we can move forward then, knowing God and I are one. God, you and God are one. What more could there be than that? What more could there be? So let's just take a moment now in silence. And we gently and lovingly come back to this outer experience. As if we are awakening from a dream. As we move forward . We are no longer burdened by the things of this earth, that we can arise and be mighty in our spiritual armor and to know the truth that God sets us free and that we are one. And so it is. Amen.